Call the order. Good morning. Happy St. Patrick's Day. We'll call the House Committee on General Government, Consumer Protection, Thursday, March the 17th, 2011. We'll call to order. We'll go. Committee will start with House Bill 2859. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2859. Jan, would you please give us a summary?
Mr. Chairs and committee members, House Bill 2859 creates a task force on state historical resources, and it directs a task force to review the authority, duties, and mission of the state archives, the state library, and the state historical records advisory board, and the Oregon Heritage Commission. It directs the task force to establish a permanent schedule for semiannual joint meetings of representatives of those four agencies for purposes of ensuring collaboration and to reduce the overlap among the agencies. It directs the task force to solicit from the agencies and organizations dedicated to preservation of Oregon history a five-year plan and to arrange the joint review of the plan. And it directs the task force to develop a plan for the coordination of funding requests and grant proposals from the agencies and organizations. It directs the task force to submit a report to the appropriate committee of the Legislative Assembly July 1st of 2012. Sunsets the task force when the 2013 regular legislative session convenes. It declares an emergency effective on passage.
Thank you. Representative Nathanson, do you want to come up and speak to this bill? Good morning. Thank you. And would you please, it helps remind, always introduce yourself and for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the reminder. I'm Nancy Nathanson, State Representative from District 13. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, last summer I was provided a copy of this report called Envisioning Oregon. It was prepared by a private firm that's done work for large and small private firms, including banks and manufacturers. The consultants have done work for city, state, and federal governments. They've done work for organizations ranging from the electrical contractors and the National Football League to Special Olympics and the World Bank. They participated in helping prepare this report, which was funded by a grant from the U.S. Institute of Museum and Library Services. After reading it, I talked with one of the project team members, Mr. James Fox, who's here today, to get a fuller picture of what we're doing here in Oregon, what we have and what we don't have, with very limited resources. What I found out that many of the key agencies and local organizations that are involved with collecting, maintaining, and providing access to Oregon's history are under severe financial stress. We're talking about non-governmental organizations as well as public agencies. Local institutions like historical societies, local museums, local record archives, and even neighborhood organizations have some materials. In spite of this limitation, the very limited resources, our heritage organizations are doing terrific work, some very, very fine work. Yet an outcome of that very limited resource base is that public access to documents is diminishing, and both government records and private records and collections are at risk. Further, a lack of coordinated grant requesting strategy decreases the federal assistance that's coming to Oregon compared to our neighboring states. One of the things I learned in studying this report is that in the past 5 years, Oregon projects have received $70,493 in grant funds from the National Historical Publication and Records Commission. That's nice, but it's not a lot of money. With twice the population, the state of Washington has received six times what Oregon has received. And in Idaho, with less than half the population, they've received 2.5 times the funding that Oregon has received. It seems that there is a lack of coordination in figuring out how to apply for grants and be successful. I'd like to quote for just a minute from the report because it made such an impression on me. Given the financial instability of these and many other Oregon repositories, the Oregon historical community and the state of Oregon need to think carefully about what will happen to the state's documentary heritage if historical repositories and organizations significantly reduce access to collections or even close their doors. Adding to these dire circumstances, Oregon's record keepers now know that a lack of coordination in what is collected and ever-changing records keeping technologies are responsible for documentation gaps in our cultural institutions. These issues are not unique to Oregon. Historical records organizations around the country are dealing with the same concerns. One answer that an increasing number of states are exploring is that of collaboration among historical records repositories and with other cultural heritage organizations. And just as a reminder, this was a report prepared by a consulting firm that I explained earlier. There are several state agencies or commissions involved in one way or another, but none has actively and energetically taken on the task of coordinating the effort to ensure that we take advantage of every opportunity and make sure that the missions among the organizations are to minimize the overlaps and fill in the gaps. So this bill has three objectives: to increase and, in fact, require collaboration among all of Oregon's historical depositories, to decrease costs and increase statewide access to information, to reduce duplication of effort in state government, and to assist the non-governmental organizations by coordinating storage and access among them. And finally, to attract more federal and private grants to Oregon by coordinating grant requests. In fact, this report, Envisioning Oregon, which was done in 2009, it is a very good report. I read the whole thing. I was then took note of the fact that published in the very next year, within a year, was another report done by the Heritage Commission. So I was wondering, you know, is it a lack of coordination even that caused two reports on very similar topics within the same amount of time? This bill sets the stage for and requires the interested parties to meet and collaborate. There are a couple of other people here who can provide more detail on the bill and the objectives of the bill, the people who work in the field and really know what's going on. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Representative O'Nathanson. I'm sure there's Irish somewhere back. I appreciate you quoting that liberal firm Heritage, too, in your testimony. So. But thank you for all your work in this. Committee members, do you have any questions for Representative O'Nathanson? Representative O. Smith.
Oh, thanks. Mr. Chair, Representative Nathanson, thank you for this. We, in the last session, you know, and this session I suspect also, we'll get to hear from the Historical Society, et cetera. And I remember that one of the thoughts that occurred to some of us then was, could there be a stronger, or at least to me, could there be a stronger linkage between, for instance, the Oregon Historical Society and our university system, right? I mean, where it's located, where its main office is located is right next to campus, and there might be some scale economies, I'm not sure. I don't have it right in front of me, but I can pull it up. But the list of personnel suggested for the task force might answer this question. But is there a way to make to more firmly embrace that question, at least in the context of this?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, yes, I think so. Because the purpose of this bill is ongoing collaboration to set up the framework where there is ongoing not only discussion but coordination, I think that it does drive that discussion. And I think that would be a good question, if you wouldn't mind, to repeat for others who will be testifying.
Thanks.
Any other questions, committee members? Representative Chair Hobie. Bill Hobie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nathanson, thank you for bringing this bill forward. I have a question. So you sort of alluded to, or maybe you didn't allude to it, but you did make a comment about the amount of grants and funds that come into the state of Oregon in comparison to the state of Washington and Idaho seems to be pretty dramatically low for Oregon. And so do you... I mean, are you, or do you know, or maybe you don't know, is this because there is that lack of coordination, that nobody feels like it's their job to apply for grants to try to archive our history? I mean, it seems like that's a pretty big hole here that maybe if we had some of that money, we'd be able to do a better job of this to start with and a better job of coordinating. So it's sort of like, what comes first, the cart or the horse? I don't know if you have a comment or whether that's just a guess at what's going on.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm not going to guess other than to observe it appears that not every opportunity was taken advantage of to apply for grants. I haven't done the detailed research, but there are other people here who participate on commissions and boards who may be able to let you know whether grants were applied for and Oregon wasn't successful, or we failed to apply, or the lack of coordination meant that a grant proposal either, if not prepared, wasn't prepared to make it competitive with other proposals that were going forward. It is quite disappointing, though. Many of you have heard me say before that I'm pretty distressed at the number of times I hear we are failing to bring federal money into the state. We're not getting our share. Oregon generally, I think, in the analysis, is a net donor state to the federal government. And when I see examples of just failing to get what other states are getting, it's disturbing.
Thank you. Committee members, any other questions? Chair Hill. Representative Klim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm looking at this other task force on historical things that's coming up after this, Heritage Vitality, and they've got the State Historic Preservation Office in theirs. Do you have, I'm just looking to see, I don't see it in here, but is your thought to include them as well, given that's sort of their mission?
Mr. Chair and members, I'm happy to entertain amendments to make sure that the collaboration is as broad as possible. It was also noted at some point that the it's called SHRAB, that particular board isn't even included in statute, and maybe that's an omission that someone ought to look at. Yeah, the intent is to be as inclusive as possible and yet still be appropriate, you know, not it not be so broad as to include, for example, every neighborhood organization in every city of the state. You know, we would reach out, but as far as all the appropriate state or statewide groups, yes, that's the intent. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Representative. Have a wonderful day, and thank you for bringing this subject to our attention. Mm-hmm. We'll ask Mr. Fox, Mr. Erickson, and Mrs. Heckert. Help me. Beth, Mary Beth? Okay. Come on up, please. Yes. Thank you. Welcome to the Capitol. It's this beautiful St. Patrick's Day. And begin your testimony. Please identify yourself and start any order you want.
I'll go first. Well, thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of HB 2859. I'm James D. Fox, head of Special Collections and University Archives at the University of Oregon. For the last 10 years, a central part of my job has been to acquire, preserve, and make available to researchers and the general public books, manuscript collections, photographs, moving image collections that document the history and culture of our state. In carrying out these duties, it has become vividly clear to me that no single repository can collect all of the documents that matter to our state. Moreover, various Oregon repositories often have competed for the same high-profile collections, thus wasting some resources in this competition. I mean, I'm all for a bit of competition, but when it gets too extreme. There's a wasting of resources. And in this competition for a few very high-profile collections, we as a group often have neglected the less well-known collections, but equally important collections. From these conclusions, it was an easy step to understand that all heritage organizations in Oregon must collaborate. Instead of competing, we must collaborate. In order to maximize our resources, to jointly preserve the history of our state. To bring this idea closer to realization, I sought a federally funded grant, an IMLS LSTA grant, which was alluded to before, to work with my colleagues across the state in repositories large and small, urban, rural, to develop a comprehensive plan for collection development so that we work together to acquire these collections. The grant also would provide training for archives and library staff on how to care for manuscript collections and how to write collection development policies. Okay. The grant application was successful, and in 2008-2009, our team held a series of town hall meetings across the state. We traveled around the state talking to people in repositories large and small about what mattered to them. Through meetings and our research culminated in a report, Envisioning Oregon. The report details both short-term and long-term goals for enhancing collaboration among our heritage organizations and in developing comprehensive and practical plans for collection development. Now, as we traveled about the state and heard the concerns of our colleagues in libraries, museums, and other repositories, especially in the more rural areas, we learned that our colleagues deeply desired to collaborate, okay, with all the other organizations across the state. Cooperation, they realized, was the best means to ensure their survival, to carry out their mission, and to provide service to their constituents. Okay? Everyone acknowledged that what was needed was ongoing leadership to bring us together and move us forward towards collaborative collection development. Unfortunately, none of the larger heritage organizations in our state could do a great service to all of us with very limited resources. I want to be clear about that. Has thus far been able to make the recommendations in Envisioning Oregon a top priority. Okay. Nonetheless, all of these organizations have been supportive of the report and embrace the recommendations. Okay. A central aspect of the plan outlined in Envisioning Oregon calls for one of our larger heritage organizations, such as the State Archives, the State Library, the Oregon Heritage Commission, or the State Historical Records Advisory Board, referred to as SHRAB, to continue to hold regular meetings among repositories to share information and ideas towards achieving the goal of cooperative collection development. I discussed Envisioning Oregon with Representative Nancy Nathanson. In meetings with her and Mary Beth Herkert, Oregon State Archivist, we crafted HB 2859, which would legislate us towards joint meetings among these larger organizations, a thorough review of the authority and mission of each of these organizations. In addition, all of these organizations would develop five-year plans that are in concert. Okay. These joint meetings, review of authority, and required five-year plans certainly will enhance communication and promote discussions on collaborative programs and sharing of resources. Okay. It is absolutely crucial for efficiencies and to maximize limited resources that heritage organizations across our state collaborate more deeply than ever before. This is not to suggest that we don't collaborate in Oregon, because we do. We have a good track record for that. At the same time, we all understand that when organizations are siloed and lack comprehensive, shared plans, they cannot operate at optimal levels. Okay. HB 2859 will address these issues and foster strategic planning and accountability. And the benefits of this bill will not be concentrated in the Willamette Valley, Coral Reefs repositories across the state, particularly in the rural areas, with even less funding than we enjoy here in the Willamette Valley. Collaboration, clarity of duties, and comprehensive planning are, I believe, concepts that must be embraced, and particularly in times of economic hardship. For Oregon to best preserve its unique heritage for all future generations, HB 2859 moves us definitely in this direction. Thank you for this opportunity to speak today in support of this bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Fox, for that testimony and your speaking in support of this bill. And Mr. Erickson, you want to go next? We'll have an archive.
Co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Doug Erickson. I'm head of special collections and college archivist at Lewis and Clark College in Portland, Oregon, and served in that capacity for the last 20 years. Due to the budget cuts, recessions, and economic decline, Oregon's cultural resources continue to be underfunded. This leaves an ever-widening gap in the record and maintenance of the history of this great state. In the absence of an economically stable and self-sustaining state historical society, all of us in the cultural preservation community are required to work together to ensure that we can keep Oregon's vast cultural and diverse historical collections intact and available to all its citizens. I personally see House Bill 2859 as an opportunity for state agencies and other important historical partners to work together to assist in the stewardship and direction of the cultural history of Oregon. House Bill 2859 is the foundation for three key custodians to work together to form a state coalition that would share ideas, give leadership to the maintenance of Oregon's historical records. Each of these three identified state agencies have done stellar work to maintain and preserve their respective areas under economic duress. They should be commended for their continued work in a difficult time in the state's economic history. House Bill 2859 brings together these underfunded programs in a more formal partnership in order to share ideas, resources, and actions in a more collaborative way. The centralization of efforts provides a clear, unified, and powerful voice to state legislators and the Oregon community at large. The history and documentation of Oregon's present and past must be available in a variety of forums, not just libraries, classrooms, museums, and universities. By expanding to the new ways of disseminating culture, such as social media, online exhibitions, public displays, and oral histories, we can engage the public with Oregon's history in common and familiar places. I recommend that you have an if you have the opportunity to look at the thing that both the report that was worked on by both James and myself and others and called Envisioning Oregon that was referred to by Representative Nathanson. And I think it will outline in more detail the issues that we're facing as a state. And I think both from a private perspective, at a private university, we all want to work together, even in the public and private sectors, to ensure that our histories are taken care of, that they are used, and that they're available for everyone. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for that testimony. This is Perkle. Mary Banks.
Good morning, co-chairs and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mary Beth Herkert, and I am the director of the Secretary of State's Archives Division. I'm here to testify today on House Bill 2859, which would establish a task force on the state historical resources charged with developing plans for coordination among agencies and institutions dedicated to preserving Oregon history. The bill would formally require the State Archives, State Library, Oregon Heritage Commission, and the State Historical Records Advisory Board representatives to meet on a regular basis and address a number of issues, including collaboration amongst agencies. This collaboration currently exists in some form due to the personalities of the current directors and their willingness and desire to work together. House Bill 2859 would formalize the need for these agencies to work together long after the current directors have left. In addition, the general public, other agencies, lawmakers, etc., confuse the roles of the state library and public libraries versus the state archives and local historical societies versus county and local museums versus the Oregon Heritage Commission. In the professional's mind, we think we have clearly defined the roles. However, the roles sometimes become morphed because of lack of resources, location, necessity, or all of the above. The goal of the task force would be to have the agencies and organizations dedicated to the preservation of Oregon history clearly define their duties and then work together to identify and reduce any overlap that may exist. Finally, the task force will be charged with developing a plan for centralizing and coordinating funding in the form of grants or awards for the state's local agencies and organizations dedicated to preserving Oregon's history, not only for today's citizens, but for future generations as well. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Committee members, test questions for our witnesses? Representative Klim?
No. I'm just still reading real quick.
Okay. Representative Sheehan?
So I'm fairly new here, and I think about 3 weeks ago I actually found the Capitol without my GPS. The very first time, it sort of killed my soul because it meant that I was becoming part of this system. And so I'm looking at things like task forces all the time and trying to find what the value is here. I mean, this seems like you're already doing this, and I don't know that this requires us to bless this idea. Can you just do this?
Can we just do this? Well, thus far we really haven't done it. We do collaborate, and we collaborate well, but there hasn't been the level of collaboration I think is necessary in this sort of trying economic times. We need to meet on a regular basis with all the heritage organizations at least twice a year, develop strategic plans, 5-year plans that are done in concert. It's basic sort of business, basic organizational management. Okay, you need to review your missions, you need to review your charges periodically because things do morph, things change. It's just basic management. This would facilitate those meetings and those basic organizational plans.
So the answer is you can do it, but you're not doing it because you don't have the per diem to get there, or what's the problem?
Mr. Co-Chair and Representative Sheehan, I think it's more right now there's because the main institutions that are named in this task force, we're willing to work together and that sort of thing, but as directors change, that's not always been the case. We've had other previous directors of the institutions or what for whatever reasons, it wasn't their top priority, and I think that's what it is that with competing priorities, unless, we'll work together, we'll talk about the issues, but we've never formalized a solution to the issues. And so I think that's where this task force is driving us, is to, yes, we've identified the issue, but now let's do something about it, and it formalizes that process for us.
Okay. Representative Klim?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a similar question I asked Representative Nathanson, but now I'm wondering if I'm starting to get towards the crux of the matter. So I'm reading the statutes where we have a thing called the Historic Preservation Plan already in statute in the 1983 session. It's always good to bring the 80s back. And it says the duties of the state historic preservation officer shall conduct or cause to have conducted a comprehensive statewide survey to identify district sites, building structures, and objects that are potentially significant in Oregon history, prehistory, architecture, archaeology, and culture, shall prepare and implement a comprehensive statewide historic preservation plan, and which is sort of what it sounds like you're talking about, and that person's not in here in the bill currently. And then over here there's a state advisory committee on historic preservation as well, which is not in here, but I know that's what we're talking about, is historic preservation. So I'm wondering is there a problem with this office and or this state advisory committee on historic preservation that seems to be given legislative authority to aggregate all resources statewide in some comprehensive manner?
Representative Knightson, did you want to come up and comment on that?
Chairs and committee members, that's a very good question. There's a difference between historic preservation, where you are devoted towards preserving particular historical monuments or particular documents, and the acquisition of a broad range of collections, okay, I mean, and then to bring them in, you preserve them, and then you also make them available for research. So there's a slightly different mission and direction. Is that clear? No.
I mean, I hear what you're saying.
Okay, we'll try and define it a little bit better for you. But nonetheless, that may be in statute, but we haven't always met together to talk about these issues as much as we could have. For example, the University of Oregon for many years was in deep, deep competition with the Oregon Historical Society. We competed for the exact same collections. There was very little good communication between us. That has got to change, and it is changing. Okay? It is changing. So we need to talk about the collections that we're acquiring. We need to talk about working together to acquire those collections and preserve them, make them available. Is that
follow?
Yes, sir.
I hear the need. I'm wondering if it sounds like you either need a group to talk more about how to collaborate or a referee. And I'm wondering if the state historic preservation officer, who, you know, I've worked with projects where they're involved, and many people live in fear that they're going to get involved until they figure out they're pretty collaborative. So they think, I'm going to find some Native American artifact on my site, and now this whole, you know, riverfront development is going to be completely shot because SHPO gets involved. And then they figure out that's not really the way they work. You know, they're not a harsh regulatory body. But I'm wondering if you couldn't just give the State Historic Preservation Officer some authority to be a referee in these situations where they're fighting over things, since we've vested all of our power, you know, regulatory and otherwise, in property tax abatements, everything in that office, to try and do this on behalf of the state.
Go ahead.
I don't know if they're here today. I'm just talking about them as if they're not here. They may be here. Oh, there he is.
Let's finish this panel vote.
Do you want to clarify, since it's your part of your agency?
There he is.
Sure.
Please come up and identify yourself for the record, please.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, Roger Roper, Assistant Director of Oregon State Parks and the Deputy State Historic Preservation Officer. The distinction between the State Historic Preservation Office and what's going on here is the Historic Preservation Office is all about historic sites and sites only, historic buildings and archaeological sites. This is all about historic records. It's not even about historic artifacts. It's not about public education regarding history, any of that. It's really about documentary records in archives and research libraries. So there's, it may seem like one big heritage world out there, but they're actually specialized areas, and the Historic Preservation Office is focused on buildings and sites exclusively.
Okay, thank you for that information. Other committee members? Chair Hovey.
Thank you. I appreciate you stepping forward on this as we're trying to make sense out of all this historical and heritage information about Oregon. And so the Oregon Heritage Commission is under the state parks purview, I guess, or is a arm of state parks? Is
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Hovey, yes, the Oregon Heritage Commission is another entity under parks. So there's the State Historic Preservation Office that's about historic sites, and the Oregon Heritage Commission, which coordinates the broader range of heritage activities. So museums, archives, educational activities, heritage tourism activities, the broad range. And the one distinction between the Oregon Heritage Commission and, say, the State Archives or the State Library is the Heritage Commission doesn't have a collection of anything. It's an organizer of these other entities. It's trying to make sure that everyone is talking to each other. Now, the historic records component is one narrow part of what the Heritage Commission is about. It's not all they're about, but it's one specific slice. So I hope that clarifies a little better.
Follow up. Yeah, I appreciate that. It seems like the Oregon Heritage Commission really is sort of the center of all this historical and cultural information and artifacts and buildings that we're talking about here, and it seems like that collaboration is something maybe that doesn't exist in statute now, or gives the Oregon Heritage Commission or State Parks the direction to, you know, work in a more holistic approach to this instead of having all these different little segments. And so I'm just wondering if State Parks feels like the statutory direction that they already have isn't adequate to get this job done. Essentially, I'm still disturbed by hearing that the state of Washington gets six times more grants and monies, and Idaho gets 2.5 more times more than Oregon. And I'm wondering why that has happened. I mean, I'd be interested to know if there are data or records that show that we've applied for these monies, and why are we not getting them? Because that seems like a pretty big failure, and those dollars could really help further this whole cause. And I'm starting to think this bill is necessary to give some direction. And even though we have current statutes that seem like they're leading us down this, and we have an agency that seems like it should be working on this, it doesn't seem to be happening. So it seems like that direction isn't really there.
Okay, committee members, we passed over, the plan was to have the first bill was about the Heritage Commission. We're sort of overlapping now, so, and I did that for respect to the representatives. So, if there's any other questions, we will be hearing.
Well, I was wondering if he had a comment on that. I'm not sure if I had a question in there, of course.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Colby, the Heritage Commission does have the kind of authority you're talking about, and supports this kind of effort. I would say, though, that there is one staff member, and only one staff member, for the Oregon Heritage Commission. So a very broad range of duties, very limited resources. This sort of effort is something that we certainly applaud, and we think could make great strides in the direction of getting that federal funding that's much needed.
Okay, committee members, okay. Thank you very much for your testimony this morning. Have a wonderful day, St. Patrick's Day. And thank you. Representative Nathanson, want to have some other comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to make...
Identify yourself again.
Nancy Nathanson, State Representative, District 13.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to add one more thing. In response to the question, can't they just do this already? Of course, agencies can talk with each other and can work with each other. But when you have disparate parts of state government, the silos start to develop. We're talking about the State Library, State Archives, Oregon Heritage Commission, which is part of State Parks. You also have a major player that was referred to earlier, the Oregon Historical Society, which the state has some interest in. We have the State Historical Records Advisory Board. What happens is silos develop, and can they work together? Yes. Do they? Well, sometimes. Maybe not particularly in a deliberate fashion, and as someone had pointed out earlier, this formalizes a partnership. It says, you will work together. It's expected. The coordination of effort is expected, rather than, we hope you will do it if you get around to it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And again, thank you for bringing this to our attention. It's very interesting and something we need to look into, I think. With that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2859. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3210. Jan, please briefly summarize this bill.
House Bill 3210 creates a 14-member task force on Oregon heritage vitality, and it directs the task force to review public funding systems of state and local organizations, museums, and historical societies related to Oregon cultural heritage. It directs a task force to assess private funding of local historical fund operations and museums. It directs a task force to evaluate state statutes and rules related to local historical funds and museums. It directs a task force to recommend programs and projects to encourage coordinated efforts at the state and local level to improve heritage tourism, history education, historic preservation, and related economic development. It directs the State Parks and Recreation Department to provide the staff support, and it directs the task force to submit a report to the appropriate committee of the Legislative Assembly. Sunsets the task force on February 14th of 2013, declares an emergency effective on passage.
Thank you very much. We'll ask Mrs. Jensen and Mrs. McNiff to come up, please, together. And I'll, do you have a preference in how you want to go, Christine?
Yes,
or
okay,
Christine?
I guess I do.
Thank you. Please welcome and please identify yourself.
Thank you. Good morning, co-chairs Holvey and Wisnett. For the record, my name is Christina McNitt. I represent the Cultural Advocacy Coalition, which is a statewide trade association supporting arts, heritage, and humanities. The CAC is pleased to be before you today to support House Bill 3210, which is sponsored by Representative Buckley. 3210 actually is one of four recommendations that's brought forward by the Oregon Heritage Commission as a result of a statewide grassroots effort to conduct a rigorous evaluation of the vitality of Oregon's cultural heritage. And I think the question has been begged due to your previous hearing, what is Oregon's heritage? And I submit to you its history, its archival records, its museums, its pioneer cemeteries, its historic properties, districts, and trails, its the Century Farm and Ranch programs, its built structures and environments, covered bridges, the quilting societies. It's a number, a large, diverse group. Despite of, or maybe because of this diversity, and all of these sectors tucking under the umbrella of heritage, Oregon's sesquicentennial birthday served less as a celebration of our state's rich history and more of a clarion call about its future. So in 2009, we saw the end of the Oregon Trail Interpretive Center in Oregon City close. We saw the Oregon Historical Society in Portland significantly reduce its operations, and we saw the Southern Oregon Historical Society in Jackson County shuttered for months. It's hard to reconcile the fact that as we celebrated 150 years of our heritage and history, at the exact same time, our state historic flagship, the Oregon Historical Society, was faltering. The very institution that houses 25,000 maps, 30,000 books, 12,000 linear feet of documents, 16,000 rolls of microfilm, 2.5 million photographic images of our heritage. That was a wake-up call. And this is a flagship institution. So imagine what's happening in our 50 county historical museums, or the Aurora Colony of Music, or the Spray Historical Museum. It just cascades down from there. Credit goes to the Oregon Heritage Commission, whose members stepped up to examine the immediate and the long-term challenges with an intent of stimulating solutions. House Bill 3210 is one of their four recommendations for further work. It establishes a 14-member task force on Oregon heritage vitality to review and critically evaluate and report back recommendations to this legislative body by October 2012. Ms. Nordland already kind of went through what the task force does, so maybe I'll spell out who the task force members are. It includes a member of the state House and Senate. A member of the Oregon Heritage Commission, the State Historic Preservation Officer, Association of Oregon Counties, the League of Oregon Cities, the Oregon Historical Society, the Oregon Cultural Trust, the Oregon Museums Association, the Oregon Tourism Commission, a private or not-for-profit heritage organization, a federally recognized tribe, two public members. I think that that displays a broad group of folks who would bring emphasis to this issue. The task force will sunset and go away on February 4, 2013, and it's to be staffed through the State Parks and Recreation Department, which is currently included in the department's budget. Additionally, we ask that Section 1, Sub 12 of the bill, which you'll find on page 2, is deleted, as House Bill 3210 is not meant to have any impact on the general fund. Oregon's cultural heritage is a blessing, but it's also a responsibility of our present generation for the future. It's a significant factor, but it's often unmeasured. That's one of our problems. It's typically a public-private partnership throughout communities, but with no single entity responsible for its conservation and development. It misses opportunities. I think you've heard about those grant opportunities missed earlier this morning. It deserves a focused, integrated, and high-level review by key influence leaders, such as those that would be convened under House Bill 3201. And finally, I'm going to sum up with a board member of mine named Jane Ann Up with the High Desert Museum in Bend, also a relatively large cultural institution. But she says, it's easy to just focus on your own survival. We're going to have to turn our eyes outward soon to connect with each other and to make sure we're connected to our community. And I see that that's exactly what House Bill 3210 does. As all of our heritage and cultural institutions are struggling for survival, they don't have the luxury of looking up, and that's what this bill and this task force would provide. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mrs. Jensen, identify yourself and welcome.
Thank you, Co-Chair Wisnett and Co-Chair Holby and members of the committee. My name is Kimberly Jensen. I'm a professor of history at Western Oregon University. I'm taking a break from grading final exams to come visit you today, so thanks for that. My students, thank you, too. I'm a user of Oregon's cultural resources, Oregon's heritage. And I feel so strongly about that because I think you can all remember when the light went on for you about when you wanted to be in public service. How that happened for you is all very different. But I want our students to have that opportunity. I want the light to go on for them. In order to do that, we need to connect them with the heritage of our state. We have to. And it's so important. And so what we need to do is work together to find ways to keep museums open, to keep archives open, and to enable enable our resources to grow. I'm also a member of the Heritage Commission, a fairly new member. I'm a volunteer with that organization, a governor-appointed volunteer. The staff is great. The staffs of museums are great, of archives. They're my colleagues, and they work really hard. But we need something more, and we need this coordination. I'm a person that's helped, in a small way. The commission has created this vitality report, and I'm wondering if you have this. So I'd be may I come and hand it to you?
Give it to the lady over here.
I will.
Give it.
Thank you.
Here, I can to Mrs. Sullivan. Thank you. Thank you, Doctor.
Thank you. Our resources are in peril. They are really in peril. And there are also some great things going on. And so we need to coordinate. We need to work together to make sure that we move forward together as a heritage community. I'm working with a group that's commemorating the 100th anniversary of women's suffrage. And I find that a lot of people think about 1912 as being very far away and not really related to us. But what's really important is that that's about citizenship, and it's about the broad movement for human rights, for civil rights, for citizenship. We need citizens today to have the opportunity to learn about the links they have with the past, how others have struggled for citizenship, how others have found successful ways to move forward as a community, and when their failures happened, why, so that we can learn from that. My hope is that you will think to that time when the light went on for you about being a public servant, and that you will understand why it's so crucial that all of these different organizations come together so that we can plan, work well together, coordinate, be efficient, so that Oregon can continue to offer that heritage to our citizens today and to those of tomorrow. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I hope all of your students have the luck of the Irish on their test.
Thank you.
Have good papers to read. Committee members? Representative Clem.
Thank you. So this bill I like a lot better. I think funding is a very serious issue. What I'm wondering about, just because, now you are on the historic
I'm a new member, a fairly new member of the Heritage Commission. Uh-huh.
I'm going to try and ask you this question, even though there may be somebody else who needs to answer it, about the Heritage Commission. So, and this is sort of about the last bill, which is not technically appropriate, but this is it. Okay, thank you. It talks about the Oregon Heritage Commission is designated as the primary agency for coordination, and then they are supposed to prepare and adopt an Oregon Heritage Plan to address coordination for the identification, curation, restoration, and interpretation of heritage resources, increase efficiency and avoid duplication among various groups, coordinate a comprehensive inventory of state-owned cultural properties. So before I was looking at something that was really about buildings, and I'm wondering if I'm also looking incorrectly at this, but it talks about them raising grant funds, federal, state, private sources, etc. So this, I'm wondering about the funding part. I completely get, and I, for your information, was the tour guide of the Marshfield Sun Printing Museum in the summer of 1991.
Yes,
but I am wondering about that other issue.
I appreciate your question. I'm wondering, since we have some experts in the audience, Mr. Roper, and also Mr. Janssen, who's the coordinator of the Heritage Commission, and I will gladly yield my seat.
Please identify yourself before you respond again for the record, please.
Yeah. Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee, Roger Roper, Assistant Director for Oregon Parks and Recreation Department. And with me is Kyle Janssen, who is the Oregon Heritage Commission Coordinator, and he's on our staff. I want to make sure I understand your question specifically. It's about the purview of the Oregon Heritage Commission.
And the Oregon Heritage Plan that they're supposed to prepare and adopt as it relates to this other plan and coordination issues that we heard about before.
The Oregon Heritage Plan has been prepared, and it's due for a new version. It has about a five-year shelf life, so that's forthcoming. The Heritage Vitality Report that was distributed to you just now was a specialized study that the Heritage Commission took on to really get the pulse of what's going on out there, and an official plan will follow after that. But the Vitality Study identified eight key areas that are issues out there in the heritage community, and then came up with four specific recommendations. One of them that rose to the top and needed the most attention was this issue about funding. That's what was the genesis of this bill, that it was the most important recommendation that came out of that vitality study, and it was really beyond what the existing structure could delve into in terms of the organizations. It was felt that there needed to be more attention given to it because of the complexities with how you might fund things from a public and private perspective.
Mr. Chair, follow up.
Please.
The funding thing I totally get. Totally on board with that. I'm still really talking about that last bill, I guess. It was about just coordination of resources and activities, the task force on state historical resources to develop plans for coordination among agencies. And then in this other area here, I'm reading about the commission's is designated the primary agency for coordination of heritage activities. It's almost the same words exactly. And then it talks about preparing a plan, and there's supposed to be this Oregon Heritage Plan to address coordination for identification, curation, restoration, and interpretation of heritage resources. I know before I was off because the SHPO is the building, but the commission and the Heritage Plan does sound like it's supposed to have enough authority in it and membership in it to make the plans that are being called for in this other bill. But I may be wrong. It just sounds like it to me in reading these things.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Klim, I think you're correct that the other bill's focus fits within the broad parameters of the Heritage Commission duties. It's such a specialized area, though, with its own needs, that I think that's why that bill was coming forward, because there's specific federal funding and specific needs with research repositories that they felt that the added focus and attention that would be given was needed, but I don't want to put words in their mouth either.
Just one last statement.
Yes, sir.
I just noticed that, you know, that SHPO wasn't in there. I didn't know if that was inadvertent or advertent, but the commission, a member from it, is on proposed to be on this other thing, and I think that's what I'm sort of digging at. Is there some problem that we need to be understanding with the entity we set up for this particular thing that this other bill is trying to then you know, there's been references to personalities working together well, other ones not, and I sense some weird issue here that is a problem. It may just be purely there's so much historic subset that we have to have a lot of different groups, but I mean, obviously the state tried to get a coordinated comprehensive plan and entity together to go for grants and do all this, and I'll just let it go. It was the other bill anyway. But the funding, I'm totally with you. I completely support this effort.
Thank you. Other members? Chair Hovey?
Thank you. Just something real short. I appreciate Representative Klim's inquiry, and I somewhat agree with him, but I think there's some valuable pieces in both bills, and there's one piece in the last bill that talks about reviewing the authority duties and missions of some of these different groups, and I think that sort of aimed at going, we got a lot of different players here that are all kind of going their own separate ways, and there seems to be a lot of overlap and a lack of coordination in this generally, you know, and I keep going back to the amount of money that's not coming to Oregon is just alarming to me. And so I think these bills are sort of both aimed at trying to, maybe we need to consolidate some of these groups into a more singular mission, and maybe we need to consolidate these two bills into one. I don't know if that's possible. I'm looking at there is some slight differences, but I think maybe we need to really be looking at trying to refocus our energy as a state on these issues. Because it seems to have a lot of different fingers going different directions to me, just apparently. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative, I should have called you.
O'Sheehan?
Yeah, definitely. Representative O'Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what prevents you from applying for the federal money right now? What prevents you from even holding these sort of meetings that you're asking for right now?
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Sheehan, I feel a little unprepared to speak to that. The meetings regarding the historic records, the previous bill, or the task force meetings?
What you're proposing here, if you're able to travel the state and put these sort of things together, can you not just call up the League of Oregon Cities and the Cultural Trust and get together and talk about this stuff? And what's preventing you from doing that?
It probably could be done. It's those who put together this bill, and I should say this isn't a bill that we're putting forward as a department, but we applaud the effort and we certainly support it. It could be done. The thinking was that this puts more focus on it, gives it more attention, allows them to meet more frequently and address some of the broader issues that go beyond just the Heritage Commission. Because if we're talking about public funding for historical organizations, that ripples into areas of expertise that go beyond just the heritage community. And so it was felt that they needed to have these other perspectives brought in with the League of Oregon Cities and others who could... Because sometimes what seems like a simple solution to a historian about why can't this funding work, there are all sorts of policy reasons why that might not work. And so this task force would help cover those kinds of issues.
Okay. Thank you. Co-Chairs Holvey and Wisnett, Representative Sheehan, I'd also like to call your attention to the bill on line 7, page 2. It's not all about funding in House Bill 3210. It really does try to encompass some of the outcomes in the Heritage Vitality Task Force report that talks about encouraging coordinated efforts at the state, county, and city levels to improve heritage tourism, history education, and historic preservation and related economic development. We found a number of issues, and I'll just whip through them really quickly, but funding is a big one, but there's little meaningful collaboration and coordination among heritage organizations and communities today, and I think you're hearing that. Inability to measure and articulate the economic value of Oregon's heritage. Changing educational requirements have required time and respect given history restriction and instruction in primary, secondary, and higher education. Shortage of people with skills and knowledge to address the issues of preservation, fundraising, grant writing, leadership, technology, capacity building issues. Changing demographics and expectations, including developing new leadership. Quite frankly, the roundup I went to, the folks we're relatively seasoned folks, and having a hard time getting another generation to come in and volunteer and run these small organizations. Limited use of 21st century communications and advocacy structures, like a website, like capacity building. Can we do something from the Heritage Commission through this task force, recommend maybe best practices that could be distributed throughout the counties, and uneven development and use of technology. So with that, I will stop.
Mr. Johansson, did you have anything you'd like to say, sir?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Okay, committee members, I think that we have our attention on this, and I think it was good bills. We appreciate you bringing them forth. And with that, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3210. Since we're not back on another bill, Representative Conger and I both tell you that the most outstanding museum in Oregon is the High Desert Museum, a private museum that was commented on, and we could use your business, your bring your children over, or to be highly informed and entertained and educated in the High Desert Museum. Now, back to the political ad over.
You closed the public hearing.
It was not a public
hearing. It was dead. It was an advertisement.
Okay. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3490. Jan, please give us a summary of the bill.
House Bill 3490 specifies the conditions under which a county is to provide workers' compensation coverage to qualified search and rescue volunteers. Declares an emergency effective on passage.
Committee members, I have some testimony, but I'm going to do you a favor and not try to explain who pays Terry and which County A and County B. Mr. Paul O'Snyder, dressed really great for today, is going to testify on this bill for us. Mr. O'Snyder. Clarify for you. Mr. Also, committee members, Representative Matthews had some experience and talked to me before the meeting about this question as far as military volunteers, and so I'm sure they will have questions on that. Thank you. Go ahead, sir. Please remind or identify yourself on this St. Patrick's Day.
Thank you, Co-Chair Wisnett, Co-Chair Holvey, members of the committee. I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties, and top of the morning to you all. I'd like to thank Representative Wisnett for introducing House Bill 3490 on our behalf and City County Insurance Services' behalf. As Representative Matthews knows quite well, we've worked on legislation last legislative session that provides that, among other things, that when search and rescue volunteers are involved in a search and rescue under the auspices and leadership of the sheriff, those search and rescue volunteers are conclusively presumed to be covered for workers' compensation by that county. And that's easy enough and simple enough. But the question, though, that came up after the legislation passed and the issue that is addressed by House Bill 3490 is this. If Hood River County and Clackamas County both have some responsibility for the Mount Hood National Forest, it's in their collective jurisdiction. If Hood River County is doing a search and rescue on Mount Hood, and they need help. They call in Clackamas County. They say, we know you have search and rescue volunteers who are certified. Will you send your volunteers to help us with this search and rescue effort? The question is, who's covering those search and rescue volunteers in that circumstance? What's common practice among counties and cities is that they enter into mutual aid agreements rather regularly. If we get into trouble that we can't handle and we need our neighbors to come over and give us a hand, they'll do that. And so the agreements that they enter into usually say, okay, if we send our folks over to help you out, they're still our folks. We've trained them, we've certified them, we're covering them for workers' compensation and for everything else. The question is, would that apply under the existing law that was passed in 2009. And a lot of folks concluded, well, it's not totally clear whether that's something we can do. We think we can, but we don't want to get into a situation where we have a conflict or even a lawsuit. And so what happened during the interim was that City County Insurance Services, SAFE, Liberty Northwest, Multnomah County, Washington County, Marion County, Deschutes County, Lane County, Jackson County, and Douglas County all entered into a memorandum of understanding. And the memorandum simply says this: if Clackamas County, for example, responds at the request of Hood River County to do a search and rescue that's in the jurisdiction of Hood River County, and they send their volunteers, then Clackamas County continues to cover its volunteers for workers' comp purposes. And House Bill 3490 basically memorializes that memorandum of understanding approach. It does a number of good things, I think, that would be beneficial both to the counties and to the search and rescue volunteers. And that is, for one thing, there wouldn't be any gaps in coverage. And when the county, when Clackamas County sends its volunteers, they're on Clackamas County's ticket throughout. When they're leaving their home, when they're driving down the road in Clackamas County, when they're heading over to Hood River County, when they're in Hood River County, there aren't any gaps. And so we think that's beneficial for both, for the volunteers and for the counties. It would also say, though, that if someone shows up on his or her own and says, I'm certified in XYZ County, and I heard you need help, I'm here to help you. In that situation, the bill also says that if the individual does that, and if the sheriff at the scene in writing acknowledges the qualifications, then it's the county where you're doing the search and rescue that covers that workers' compensation situation. If the person just shows up not having been sent by his or her own county, then that sheriff is the one who picks up the cost and the responsibility. We have amendments to the bill that are in the process of being drafted, the substance of which would just change lines 27 to 28 on page 1, and it would say, the way it reads right now, it says, the sheriff shall acknowledge the qualifications in writing at the scene. But you'll notice that in other places in the bill, it talks about the sheriff or the sheriff's designee. And we think it's important and appropriate to expand the language here to say the sheriff or the sheriff's designee. Because there could be multiple locations involved in the same search. The sheriff's not going to be in every one. And as long as somebody who's responsible in the county makes that acknowledgement, we think that should be sufficient.
Thank you very much. Is that...
That's it. Thank you, Chief.
Okay. Hope Representative Matthews, you understand this completely.
Yeah, I do, Mr. Chair. May I comment?
Please.
I want to thank Mr. Snyder. Thank you very much, and congratulations on your master's victory. I don't remember what year that was, but the green jacket. Congratulations.
Actually, I got it from a New York City bus driver.
Okay. But I do appreciate it. You know, last session in 2009, we had a bill in the Veterans Committee. And it had come out of the House, went over to the Senate, and Senator Przanski put together a work group in which you participated, and I appreciate you now further clarifying that language and that agreement. So thank you.
Thank you.
Also, the amendment, which I'm very appreciative because I was very concerned about the sheriff being the sole authorizing agent there, given the ICS system and the fact that you might have someone completely different in charge of the operation itself. This makes perfect sense. So I look forward to supporting this. I hadn't heard that there were any problems with the exception of there was apparently a ruling at the AG's office that had thought that perhaps the responsibility of all of this would land onto the Department of the Military. And so they were shown as having a $1 million item in their budget this year that that General Caldwell had talked to me and said, that's not what we can do. And I told him, I said, look, we will further clarify that in this session, and this bill does that. So I really appreciate, again, your work and your efforts, and I look forward to supporting this bill with the amendment. Thank you.
Co-Chair Wisnes, Representative Matthews, thank you. I wasn't aware of that AG's opinion. I'll find it.
And if I could. And my guess is that Brigadier General Caldwell would have been here. However, he's at the reintegration summit this morning. So I'll touch base with them later, make sure that we're further clarified. But I don't believe that ruling was accurate. Not that I'm going to take on the Attorney General, but I think in this case we had enough dialogue in our works in our work group to firmly outline where we were at with the Association of Counties. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Rep. Chair Hovey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just curious if MWAC had an opportunity to look at this or wanted to look at this. And for their comments, they usually look at anything that has anything to do with workers' comp.
Co-Chair Wisnett, Co-Chair Hovey, we hadn't brought it to them yet, but we could do that very quickly. I don't think there would be a problem.
Mr. Chair, I don't think there would be either, but I think it would be a good idea to check in with them.
Since we're going to have to get an amendment anyway, Mr. Snyder, the amendment's not ready, right?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
So before you get the amendment, you can maybe do the amendment and the bill with them before we bring it back.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Representative Klim.
Thank you. You know, I'm just let's try to find this. I'm just looking up from 2000. So in 2009, we had the beginning of workers' comp coverage for volunteers helping in rescues, and prior to that we didn't?
Co-Chair Wisnett, Representative Klim, in 2009 we created the statewide mandate. Before that, it was whatever each county chose to do.
Okay, follow-up? Yes. So, in 2007... Representative John Lim once had a bill trying to, and I don't know what happened to it.
Don't bring it up.
I'll take this offline with you later.
Okay, any other questions, committee members? If not, then we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3490.
Thank you.
We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3487. Jan, please give us the summary.
I will. Mr. Chairs and committee members, House Bill 3487, it specifies that new or increased state agency fees adopted following adjournment sine die of a regular session of the Legislative Assembly will be rescinded on adjournment sine die of the next regular session unless authorized by legislation. It declares an emergency effective on passage.
Oh, isn't it? Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Gene Maiden. My mother's maiden name is Jolly Wisnett, so that's my Irish connection. And I am the, House District 53 State Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill. Let me start, and for the committee members, Mr. Chair and committee members, the chair looked at this and said, hey, this is a good bill, so let's put this on the agenda, and I'm glad he did, because I think it is a good bill. But let me start and tell you that this bill doesn't accomplish what I wanted to, but it's a good first step. I found during the interim, I got a note from a friend and a businessman in Redmond talking about how his Department of Consumer Business and Services, the rate, they put a press release out saying the rate wasn't going to go up, but their premium assessment, which pays for administration of workman's comp and workplace programs, was going up from 4.6% to 6.4%. And as my friend and businessman in Redmond pointed out, that was a 39% increase in that fee. So I started investigating and discovered that agencies, after we adjourn, have the authority to raise rates. And those increased rates are okay until we come back in and they have to justify them or they go away. So I said, I'm not sure I like that. So I started investigating and I looked into this. There was a press release came out on this the rulemaking authority where agencies have this authority. And I decided that I wasn't going to take on the mountain in this session to address whether agencies should increase rates after we adjourn. But I'm making a small step up the mountain because this bill, what it does, it says that those rate increases, instead of waiting 2 years before they go away, will now go away because we have annual sessions. They'll go away in February of 2012. That's all the bill does, is change the current law that says it doesn't get reviewed until and have to be re-justified until the 2013 session, and now it has to be justified or it goes away in the next annual session. So we've cut down the time that those rate increases are impacted without legislative review. That's basically what the bill does. And there's probably a lot of other legislation out there that we probably need to update as far as annual meetings, I was advised by, I think, DAS. So that's the bill, Mr. Chair and committee members. And as the co-chair, Hovey, said, I think it's a good bill, something we need to do. And I think all we're doing is changing a date in this bill. So I'm available for questions.
Questions from the committee. Representative Clem.
Has the Senate President given you a hug for building more marketing around why we need the February 2012 session?
I voted against, Mr. Chair, Representative Clem, I voted against that, but this does save us some money. Thank you for that point.
Other questions from the committee? Not seeing any. Representative Wisnett, thank you very much for bringing this forward. Not certain whether we have anyone else that wishes to testify on this bill. Hearing none, I will close the public hearing on House Bill number 3487.
Committee chairs and members, House Bill 3487 has a subsequent referral to the Revenue Committee. However, the Legislative Revenue Office prepared a revenue statement indicating there is no revenue impact. So I contacted the Revenue Office, and they're suggesting that the bill be sent to Ways and Means, and so it would require time for the committee chairs to request through the Speaker's office that the subsequent referral be changed. Okay. So it's not time to work it.
Mr. Representative Cameron.
Chair, if I mean, why would we send this bill to Ways and Means?
It could come right to the floor.
There's no budget impact on this, is there?
Well,
in this current biennium?
It's my understanding that it actually does have a budget impact, that it will change the way they actually look at this through biennium. So they have to take that into account. That's my understanding. We can certainly get a clarification on that, though.
Okay. Do you want to send it today? Is that what you're asking to
do? Mrs. Norland, yeah. Mrs. Norland has
that
today.
Committee chairs Representative Cameron and members. Ken Rocco, Legislative Fiscal Officer, is requesting that it be sent to Ways and Means. The fiscal impact statement has not been prepared or released yet, so we don't know what it says.
Okay.
But the officer suggests it go to Ways and Means.
Okay. Thank you.
So thank you for those questions, and we thought it was going to be able to move these and install that. So we didn't open up the work session. We're still in public hearing. So with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3487.
Question, Mr. Chair?
And I think maybe you gave me the answer, but couldn't we just move it to revenue now without recommendation and let them handle whatever happens, you know, going forward?
We'll wait and clarify because it could then slow it down. I think we still got the deadline to get it through revenue, Representative Smith. So thank you for the question.
Okay, where are we going now?
2825.
That's all we have. How about this last one?
We're waiting on the fiscal.
You want to go skip ahead to
the... You could adopt the dash revenue amendment and bring it back on a day for a final vote.
Oh, what do you want?
We don't have the fiscal on this.
I
5-7 amendment, so you could adopt the amendment and just bring it back for final.
Yeah, we should adopt the amendment.
Anyone else? But not. But we were going to do a public hearing to be sure that everyone was on board. I'm going to do, go ahead and do the public hearing, open up a public hearing and work session on it.
I don't see Representative
Thatcher. Need to calm them down. They're going to come down. But I'd like to get on the record that everyone's agreed on the dash sevens.
We should have probably had them come down.
They plan to be here.
Why don't we roll the bill over? We have to bring it back anyway.
All right, so we're going to, well, let's, well, we can see if you get it, we'll go to the next bill and then go from there.
If you can work this next bill, so I can call.
Okay. And is that Nathanson's bill too? We just have to do the dash three. Well, let's do. We can do this one. Okay, let's go ahead and open to 2855 and see if they can get down. Don't do that. Okay. We're at stand at ease, recess, or not a recess? Stand at ease for a minute. We're trying to get Ms. Representatives down to see it. Representative Nathans is not here. She left us.
She said she was not needed.
Okay. Okay, committee members, we'll open a work session on House Bill 20. Could you give us, remind us the bill and discuss the dash three amendment, please?
Committee members, chairs, House Bill 2855 creates the State and Local Government Efficiency Task Force, and it directs the task force to analyze at least the following service categories: elections, human services, natural resources, education, and criminal justice. And it directs the task force to submit a final report by October 1st of 2012, and it requires the task force to use services of permanent staff in the offices of the governor, secretary of state, judicial, and legislative fiscal office. Sunsets the task force February 4th of 2013. The committee heard this bill February 22nd. There's no revenue impact. There is an impact statement issued. There's a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. And after the public hearing, there were issues raised, and Representative Nathanson prepared the Dash 3 amendment, which you should have before you. The Dash 3 amendment specifies that the seven members of the task force who are going to be appointed from state agencies and departments will represent expertise in the areas that the task force will analyze, and that one of those seven may be from the private sector. The Dash 3 amendment also specifies that the report will include recommendations for administrative actions and legislative proposals.
Good. I see Representative Nathanson's rejoined us. You want to speak to this? Join us up here at the table. Or thank you, Representative. Please identify yourself. And I guess we want you to speak to the Dash 3s. You presented the bill, and I think you, and some of the comments, your Dash 3s addressed from the previous meeting. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. In listening to your discussion during the public hearing time when you were hearing this bill,
was... Identify yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Representative Nancy Nathanson from District 13. Thank you. Sorry. It was clear that there were several improvements that could be made to the bill to help clarify and refine the issues. And so the amendments you see include several. One is to clarify who should be participating. We wanted to make sure that we included, for example, in particular, one member may be from the private sector representing knowledge about organizational change or related expertise. So that was one of the changes that we think helps improve this. Another is to clarify what the final report should be, not just a report. You don't get off with just a sentence or two saying everything's fine. So we clarified saying that it shall include recommendations for administrative actions and legislative proposals, meaning it should function the way the previous task force functioned, not just be a report that sits on a shelf, but actually result in action that can achieve change. Of course, it would be subject to the review, public hearings, and so forth, and approval of the following legislative assembly. But it should should result in actions to initiate change.
Thank you very much, Representative. Any questions of committee members on the dash 3? I guess we were supposed to have the motion before we had the discussion again. Yeah. You want to make
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2855.
Dated March 8, 2011.
Dated
March 8.
March 8, 2011.
Thank you very much, Mr. Co-Chair. Any other discussion, committee members? And thank you, Representative, for your testimony.
On the amendment?
Yeah.
Sorry? No, on the amendment?
Yeah. Okay, we'll have a roll call vote on the amendment, please.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Quinn?
Yes.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Co-Chair Holvey?
Aye.
Co-Chair Wisnett?
Aye. The motion carries and the dash 3 amendments have been adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2855 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay, committee members, any discussion on the motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've actually wrestled with this quite a bit because it's an 18-member task force on government efficiency, and I've been trying to go back and forth on why I would vote for this or against this, and I'm afraid I'm going to have to vote against it, and I apologize to Representative Nathanson, because the only reason I could find that I wanted to vote for it was out of respect for Representative Nathanson and the good work that she's done, so I apologize. I'm going to have to vote no.
Thank you very much. Any other discussion, committee members? If not, roll call, please, Mrs. Alvin.
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Quinn?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
No.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Co-Chair Holby?
Aye.
Co-Chair Wisnett?
Aye. Motion carries. Close the work session on House Bill 2855. We'll go back now and open up.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Next time, could we have more compliments about how Representative Nathanson chaired that group? I felt like she wasn't given enough during the last hearing on this topic.
Thank you very much, Representative.
Yes, you have a floor opportunity.
Mr. Chair?
For that.
Mr.
Chair?
Yes.
I would just like to compliment Representative Nathanson on doing a fantastic job chairing that task force.
Thank you, Representative Smith.
I was hoping she'd be in the room. It would have been funnier. You're slow on the switch, man.
Okay, we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2825. And ask Representative Thatcher and Representative Barnhart to come up and discuss the Dash 7 amendments, please.
Give you a definition. Just the three things up. Clearly,
you did right. Okay.
Okay, so we had our subsequent removed.
Let the chair be a chair between
us. Yeah. Please, reminder to my colleagues to identify yourself for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Phil Barnhart. I'm the state representative from House District 11. Representative Thatcher and I have held a number of work group meetings with representatives of business, representatives of Department of Administrative Services, Oregon Business Department, and local governments as we worked on trying to bring this bill into shape. We think we've succeeded in the Dash 7 amendments. We believe that all parties are satisfied that this will accomplish the results that Representative Thatcher and I were wanting to achieve, and in a way that is expeditious, that will work for the public and also for the entities that I've mentioned.
In the spirit of the day, thank you, Representative O'Barnhart, and we'll ask Representative Thatcher to just give us in.
Okay. I'm Kim Thatcher, State Representative from Kaiser, St. Paul, and Newburgh, and talking about the Dash 7 amendments. They are essentially a gut and stuff, but they stick with the original intent. We didn't need to toss out the whole bill. It just made it easier for drafting purposes with legislative counsel. Like I said, the intent remains the same. The bill still requires agencies which collect data on economic development projects which get tax incentives from the state to post that information on the Oregon Transparency website. Section 1 of the amended bill spells out which tax expenditures related to economic development we're talking about. And this would include the enterprise zones, film production, manufacturing, and renewable energy components of BETC. The information that needs to be posted to the transparency website essentially remains the same under the amendments. However, we just clarified the section which used to say promise versus actual jobs, and that portion now talks about specific outcomes required by the tax expenditure program. So, for example, if a program required an economic development project to show the number of jobs they were going to create or show which infrastructure improvements to the community they'd be providing, that information would be part of the information posted on the website. We also wanted to avoid any increased costs to the agencies which collect this information on these projects, so we amended the language to say the information posted would just be generated from data already collected and gathered by the agencies. Many of these changes we incorporated from earlier amendments that you heard of during the previous public hearing, and I think there was some concern about protecting proprietary information or data that was not already part of the public record, so we amended it so that I think everybody's satisfied on that one. And I think we satisfied the concerns of everybody, just like Representative Barnhart says, and we're also hoping that you will rescind the referral to revenue. We don't think there should be a revenue impact, and hope that you amend it and pass it.
If I may add, Mr. Chair, the co-chairs of the Revenue Committee agree with that recommendation.
Thank you. Any questions, committee? Representative Conger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wonder if we could get, there's 16 statutory references in Section 1, Paragraph 2, and in Section 2, Paragraphs 1, 2, and 3. I wonder if and maybe we don't need to get it to pass the amendment today, but before we pass the bill, I'd like to get an explanation from legislative counsel.
Yeah, we can do that briefly if you'd like now.
Sure.
The references in subsection 2 of section 1 are to reservation enterprise zones, rural renewable energy development zone, strategic investment program, food processing equipment, electronic commerce enterprise zone, film production development contributions, film production labor rebate, a small city business development credit, also known as the Oregon Investment Advantage, long-term enterprise zone facilities, qualified research activities credit, and some portions of the business energy tax credit, manufacturing and renewable energy components only. There were some references in the earlier drafts that clearly did not belong in this bill, and we removed them.
May I follow up? Thank you. I actually was not trying to put you on the spot, but obviously you're extraordinarily well prepared. can I ask if, as you looked through the scope of what we're trying to do, and by the way, I think the intent of this, I think it's actually a very good idea, but as I look at it, I am certain, without having the specific statutory references, that there are some that we did omit, some tax credit programs, things like that. Yep. Could you at least give us a sense of what the rationale was, how you selected these particular ones, and how you omitted others?
Do you want to do that?
Well, I'm just going to say that the intent was to capture the ones that were related to economic development that were specifically tied to, we're going to start this tax credit because it's going to help develop our economy. I mean, that was the big nexus, and I don't know if you want to get more specific.
Well, I would say that we're not certain by any stretch that we've got them all. And it's possible that as attempts are made to implement the bill, that DAS will come back and say, well, we need to take one out because we simply aren't going to be able to do it. That's one of the advantages of meeting every year, is that you can make that kind of change pretty easily. I don't think anybody would claim that this is a final product. I've been here long enough to know now that you write a bill and then you come back next time and fix it. I don't know whether this one's going to need fixing or not. If I knew that today, we'd fix it today.
Thank you. Any other questions, committee members?
Can I follow up?
Yes, again? Please. I'm sorry.
First of all, I appreciate that explanation. I think that the fact that we have to come back and fix bills probably lends itself to a discussion of how many bills get introduced and whether or not it makes any sense to have that many to add to our workload. The idea then is to get this out there, see if it works, try it out, and then if it needs to be modified, fix it. I think I understand that. I think that's probably the right way to do it. Final question is, what kinds of tax credits are we giving that are not related to improving our economy?
Mr. Chair, Representative Conger, there's a book that's larger than the budget that contains the whole list. I'd recommend, if you haven't already done it, that you go through that book. There are a number of items in that book, both on income taxes and property taxes that are obsolete, that haven't been used lately, some of which we're going, I hope, to get rid of this year through the process that we instituted as a result of House Bill 2067 from the last legislature. I think a number of them were intended to have economic development impacts and turned out not to, or the impact has been so weak that it isn't worth the dollars we're spending, and I think that's part of what that other process is going to help us to tease out. We need to do it on property taxes because we haven't done it on property taxes yet. We probably need to do it on other aspects of the income tax system, but I think we've made a pretty decent start given that it hasn't been done before. I don't think this is a process that we're going to finish this session at all, but it's part of making the system more efficient. One final comment, if I may, and I think it's on the point that you made first. This bill is one piece of a much larger enterprise of moving our government from opacity, from a gray thing out there somewhere, to a vibrant, living, transparent awareness of the people of what we actually do with their money and the effort that we put in, so that the people will have a better understanding of it and be in a better position to comment on it, to ask for the kinds of things that the people want us to do. I don't think either of us claim that this is a big piece of that, but it's a little piece of that, and I think that as we move in that direction, there'll be many, many little pieces that will go to developing a whole that should lead us to a much better relationship between citizens and their government in the long haul. Again, I think this is a long-term project, and this is a little piece.
Thank you very much. Chair Hulvey had a question?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just after the last bill we heard and not recognizing efforts, I just wanted this opportunity to applaud the efforts of both Representative Thatcher and Representative Barnhart on this specific bill. I think this is a great step forward that is overdue. So thank you.
Thank you very much. So we don't have to bring up, unless they want to come up, some of the industry lobbyists. You don't have to have everyone agree, but do you think everyone has agreed there's no objection to what we have before us now?
I believe we reached agreement on the amendments. We're working very closely with them to make sure that we've got it tweaked just right.
So they're waiting out, they don't...
Instead of nodding your head?
Thank you. Please identify yourself, Mr. Craven.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Jim Craven with Tech America. Several weeks ago when you had the public hearing on this, I and a couple of my colleagues raised some just questions for clarification about the bill. Subsequently, we've worked with your good co-sponsors here and their staff and Mr. Bartholomew from Osberg to address the questions that we raised in that public hearing, and they've been addressed, and so...
Good.
And we're okay with the bills.
Very good. Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Kramer, are you familiar with the Stockholm Syndrome?
No comment, Representative Kramer.
Okay, thank you very much. Both representatives, again, thank you for your hard work in putting this together, and I think it is a good step forward in our transparency effort by the state.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Did DAS need to comment on this? Okay, thank you. Okay, with that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2825. Committee members, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2825.
Mr. Chair, I move the adoption of the Dash 7 amendments to House Bill 2825, dated 3/10/2011.
Co-Chair Hovey moves how the LC Dash 7 amendment dated March 10, 2011 to House Bill 2825. Discussion? Seeing none, Mrs. Sullivan, roll call, please.
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Flynn.
Aye.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative
Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Co-Chair Holby.
Aye.
Co-Chair Wisnett.
Aye. With that, the amendment is included in, Dash 7 is included in House Bill 2825. We do not have the physical, and with Representative Barnhart's support, we'll try to get the referral to revenue removed so we can get this physical and move it on. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2825. And with that, members, we'll adjourn the committee. Good work. Thank you. Sure.